Welcome to the Oral History Review at the Oxford University Press blog. Occasionally, we like to break up the monotony of text posts with a podcast, celebrate the oral and oral history, so to speak. With these podcasts, we hope to give the Oral History Review's authors and editors a place to elaborate on or build upon their scholarship. Furthermore, as with all of our social media efforts, we aim to build awareness of the art and craft of oral history. The following podcast is hosted by Troy Reeves, the Oral History Review's managing editor and head of the Oral History Program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Enjoy.
Thanks, Caitlin. Today I'm with Bob Wedeman. Bob is the director of the United States Air Force Academy's Oral History Center.
Bob, thanks for agreeing to talk with me today. I like to ask everyone that we interview for this podcast about their interest in oral history, so let's start there.
I am a military historian by training, and in my graduate work, I did a lot of work on the 19th century Army emergence of West Point as an institution. When I got out of grad school, I was asked to start a public history program. I had an interest in public history, went to McMurray University in Abilene, Texas, got that program off the ground. And in the summer of 2007, I had the opportunity to come to the United States Air Force Academy as a visiting professor in the Department of History, bring my history background to the teaching of cadets at the academy. And there had been an oral history program at the Air Force Academy that stretched back into the 1960s, working with Columbia University, and it kind of fallen by the wayside as teaching duties consumed most of what the officers in the Department of History were tasked with doing. In being here as a visiting professor and becoming enamored with the Air Force Academy, its mission, and what it was doing in terms of training the next generation of leaders of character for the United States Air Force Academy, I kind of harkened back to a lot of the work that I had done in graduate school on the early evolution of the U.S. military, and having spent time in the archives at West Point and having searched desperately for letters of the early cadets that, you know, we know as the great officers, the Grants, the Lees, men like that, and realizing that those people are still alive at the Air Force Academy. And there was no one here in, as part of a consistent effort to seek out and preserve that history. And fortunately, while I was here as a visiting professor, I spoke with the staff at the Air Force Academy. They were interested in developing that. And, you know, my tenure as a visiting professor ended. I left. I went on my way. And, you know, within 6 months after leaving, they said, hey, we've got this, you know, approval to create the Center for Oral History. And, you know, we'd like you to come back and get it off the ground. And, you know, I had the opportunity summer of 2010 to come here to the Air Force Academy, start their Center for Oral History, get it off the ground, and I guess that's where I am now.
Great. Thanks, Bob. I also like to ask people that are in leadership at oral history programs to talk a little bit about their current project. So is there a specific current project or a couple you'd like to mention in this forum?
Yeah, just in the way of a disclaimer, I'll make it clear, Troy, that these statements that I'm offering to you are my opinions and not those of the Department of Defense, the Air Force, the United States Air Force Academy. Yeah, the current project that I'm most heavily engaged in right now is really a project of recent nearby history that's taken place here at the Air Force Academy. If you saw the news in the summer of 2012, the summer of 2013, we had a pair of very significant fires that touched the Colorado Springs area. The summer of 2012, it was the Waldo Canyon fire. Summer of 2013, it was the Black Forest fire. And with the Waldo Canyon fire in particular, there was, and even with the Black Forest fire, there was heavy engagement from firefighting teams at the United States Air Force Academy in both fires, not only, you know, quite literally boots on the ground, but also shutting down what was the most heavily used operational military airfield in the country, the United States Air Force Academy airfield, and converting that into a heli-attack base. We were running helicopters both for Waldo Canyon as well as for Black Forest. But with Waldo Canyon, the big fight in the Waldo Canyon fire was the Tuesday where the fire roared down through the urban wildland interface, as they call it, into Colorado Springs, destroying, you know, 346 homes in a matter of hours. Well, the next day after that happened, there was a real fight to keep the fire from moving northward onto the grounds of the Air Force Academy. And there are some really compelling stories from the firefighters there and what they call the Battle of the Switchback, as they were able to eventually halt the spread of the Waldo Canyon fire to the north, prevent it from reaching the grounds of the Air Force Academy. You say, okay, the Air Force Academy lost, 136 odd acres of land. What was the big concern? Well, the next day, Thursday, they were going to in-process the class of 2016. So you had 1,000 plus cadets to become brand new fourth classmen into the Air Force Academy, and they really had to stop the fire and prevent it from moving. So I've been preserving that history with the firefighters involved, members of the incident management team, leadership from the Air Force Academy, their perspective on the fire, because what I've discovered in the course of that, the cooperative effort between civil authorities, military authorities, federal authorities, it all came in as part of the incident management team. That is now potentially a model for other fires elsewhere or other emergency incidents of that magnitude. So there's really a lot in the way of a usable past that's coming out of these two tragic incidents, besides just preserving the history of the Waldo Canyon and the Black Forest Fire as they relate to the Air Force Academy.
And Bob, you're uniquely positioned to document that. I'm thinking about what you said at the conference, the OHA conference in Oklahoma City, the fact that the local media in Colorado Springs was focused more on the town and less on the military.
Yeah, that's right. The military had their press conferences, and you really don't have a significant military presence in terms of a military liaison. He doesn't show up until the day after the big fire in Colorado Springs. But in the wake of that, they realized that there really is a need for a more consistent military presence, not only to have that uniform face in a community that's as dominated by the military as Colorado Springs is, but also when you're looking at the history of a region, when you've got a piece of property that's as significant as the Air Force Academy, and knowing that the local media is not going to get the story that takes place behind the gates. And when you have an oral history program that's based in an institution like that, you have the opportunity to preserve that story from inside that you're probably not going to get from elsewhere.
This podcast will be published the Friday before Veterans Day, so we do want to spend some time here to talk with you about your work with veterans. You told me before we went live here that you have a 9/11 anecdote that you might like to share.
Yeah, as I said in the beginning, as someone who did his professional historical training as a 19th century military historian, I yearn for someone who could have done this in the 1820s and the 1830s with the first couple of classes of graduates at West Point, and to preserve their experiences, what they thought about arriving at the institution and those sorts of things. But with what I'm doing at the Air Force Academy now, we're not only dealing with the veterans who became veterans by virtue of graduating the Air Force Academy in the late 1950s on into the 60s on into the 70s, but with the current conflict, we were very much on the front lines on 9/11. And I had the opportunity to interview Lieutenant Colonel Tim Conklin, who currently serves with the 120th Fighter Squadron up in Denver. And he was actually slated to fly a check ride to maintain a general's currency on the F-16 on 9/11. And as the events unfolded, the general came to him and said, "Colonel, you're not flying a check ride with me. You're flying a combat mission." And he roared up into the skies over Colorado. He and his wingman came down and basically flew combat air patrol over not only the Air Force Academy, but Peterson Air Force Base, Schriever Air Force Base, NORTHCOM, Cheyenne Mountain, to ensure that nothing was going to happen in this area. And to have someone like that talk about what he remembers the first day, he and his wingman are flying these huge circular patrols over the area, maintaining security, and something blips up on the radar over Denver. Nobody knows what's going on, so he leaves his wingman, screams up afterburners to Denver, and here's a guy who's gone sightseeing out over the Rocky Mountains in a plane, taking photographs in the morning, and trying to explain to him, "Hey, you need to land. You need to land now." To which the guy says, "What do you think I am, a terrorist?" Well, little did he know what had transpired in New York, what had transpired in Washington, what had transpired in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. But now you have not only that, but all the other graduates of the Air Force Academy who have gone out, whether they've been combat pilots in, fighters, if they've been hauling folks back and forth, if they've been serving as combat rescue personnel, things of that nature, that here are the stories as they're emerging from the ranks of the Air Force Academy, not to mention all those who served in previous conflicts, been they Operation Allied Force, Desert Shield, Desert Storm, the war in Vietnam, you know, back to the very beginning.
Thanks, Bob. When we talked about doing this, you mentioned the idea that you'd be interested in talking about how you're preparing cadets to be future veterans.
Yeah, one of the things I'm very much committed to is the notion of history being a usable past. And you know, when you think of the mission of the Air Force Academy and producing lieutenants for our Air Force and our nation, these young 21, 22, 23-year-old cadets, they have a rich heritage that they can draw upon if they are given the opportunity to have a sense of what that heritage is. And with the Center for Oral History, that's one of the things that I'm firmly committed to, is doing what I can to make sure that the cadets have these recollections from those who came before them. Every graduate of this institution has a story. Not everyone is going to go off and become like the current Chief of Staff of the Air Force, Mark Welsh, class of 1966. Not everyone is going to become the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, but they're going to serve for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and all of those graduates have experiences that are of value that can potentially provide insight, inspiration, moments of contemplation, perhaps make a young lieutenant stop and think twice about a decision that they're going to make. And in that regard, preserving the history of the graduates of the institution becomes very important in training, educating, inspiring that next generation of lieutenants for the Air Force and the nation.
You mentioned a couple of times the idea of a usable past. I want to give you a little bit more space if you want to talk a little bit more about how you try to do that at the Air Force Academy.
One of the things is simply to put cadets in contact with those veterans. I've had a number of class projects in the Department of History where cadets have been cooperating with courses on air power, courses on the history of sports, to connect them with prior graduates of the institution, to conduct interviews with them. There are also instances in teaching, as I have for a number of years, the research methods course in the history department, where I take the interviews that I've collected, put them back in the hands of cadets, and let them essentially contextualize the lives of these individuals and try to make sense of them in some way, shape, or form in their own regard. So these past figures, these past pioneers, these past graduates of the Air Force Academy not only become live for these 19, 20-year-old cadets who are reading these oral history transcripts, but at the same time may provide them with inspiration, provide them with, like I said, an opportunity to stop and think about their career, their future, what they're going to do in the Air Force as they draw upon the experiences of these other graduates for inspiration.
Robert Wedeman, you are the director of the United States Air Force Academy Center for Oral History, and I want to thank you very much for giving me some of your time today. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Troy.